This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw, but also SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0. AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review last night's Raw. What did you make of it?
Mostly fantastic. For 3 hours, especially, mostly fantastic. It's Raw. There's still duds lurking around the corner, but just loads less of them. Couldn't decide what I would pitch for our skip for our five-star review today. Because instead of it being like, right, what was the one good thing right now? It's time to rank what was everything else in terms of least worst. There was one or two bad things in the show, and I thought the rest was great.
I was, quite frankly, mostly bored during this. There was one exceptional segment of professional wrestling TV that I'm really looking forward to putting over. The rest of it, I was just like, oh, I get WrestleMania already. You've told the story that you have told. You're now just talking about the story. Just get on with it. Mm. Some fun stuff in the undercard. Nothing amazing. Nothing that gave me the wrestling feeling of, oh my God, this is great. You know what I watched last night?
What?
For the first time, and I'd never seen it before. Have you ever seen The Raid?
Yes!
Oh my God.
It's so good,
it's
isn't it?
It's awesome.
Have you seen it?
No, what's The Raid?
It's like an Indonesian...
Something like that, yeah.
Martial arts action thriller. Right. Oh my God, like some of these martial arts...
It's unbelievable.
...sequences, it was like... Kenny Omega and Malakai Black, that right. Feeling of, oh my God, he's going to get his head kicked in for like for an hour and a half, but with like gratuitous bloodshed. And,
on Netty.
It's on Netty.
Get it.
It's on Netty.
I was going to say, I think I've got the DVD somewhere because my dad watched it and was like, son, sit down, we're watching this.
Your dad?
Yeah. He loves it. He's because basically the story is what? There's like a big criminal gang in a big block of flats, effectively.
Yes, in a high-rise flat.
But the police have to go in and go either up or down, I can't remember.
Yeah.
To get to the boss. And it's just like... One guy just kicking an ass for large parts
like
of it, basically.
Cut Rubish in that DT match where there's like shagging in the bathroom. Like that one.
Something along those lines.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. So that gave me, because I'm a nerd whose brain is wired like this, oh, that was a bit like Omega and Malakai Black. That Omega and Black gave me the wrestling feeling of I love this. Literally one thing on Raw did that to me. But I'm really interested in Hamflett talking about, there are people who probably like, can really delve into why they like toast, why they love it so much.
I'm glad this has come up on a podcast. I've been waiting for the toast cast.
I can't wait for this.
Monday Night Raid.
Yes.
I had the feeling we used to get, less so now, because I really like him as part of Triple J. You remember when they'd open Dynamite and they'd just sneak in the little graphic of like, oh, here's a match we didn't tell you about. Jay Lethal's in action against someone. You're like, oh, God. When they were going through the show and they're like, oh, coming up on tonight's show, you got Chelsea Green and Bianca Belair, you got the street fight between Kevin Owens and Solo Sikoa. And I'm like, yeah, and you got the tag match, you got this as well. And then I'm like, they haven't mentioned it. They haven't mentioned Maximum Male Models. So I was in a bit of a grump, but my God, do they turn it around. And yeah, I enjoyed this show as well with all the big WrestleMania developments. Yeah, you got Kevin Owens and the Bloodline stuff. Get that out of the way. And when are we going to get to the thirsty stuff? So the show opened. Edge comes out.
Come on, give it to me!
He gets all the...
I need it, give it to me!
He says, oh, I never get sold. That's why he does this, but we all know why we're here. Finn Balor, get your ass out here. And here he comes. But he's not alone. He's obviously in a group. He's
in the fucking Judgment Day.
And it is on the other side. And they're out on the stage and they've got the what's it called? Dry ice or whatever. He's like, for once I agree with the clowns in this arena. Let's hear what you got to say.
One clown wasn't the arena. In fact, he left the arena on Saturday. Yeah. He hasn't seen since.
He says, well, I didn't come to say anything. I came here to end it, but you're going to hide behind Lurch, Pugsley and Wednesday, or you're going to set them on me or something. Good.
Is that good or not at the moment? Because like Wednesday is a big thing on Netflix,
that's
isn't
the thing,
it?
So isn't it?
Yeah. Getting away with Adam's family again.
I think so.
Yeah.
Got away with that more than the Simon Garfunkel references later. I don't know what's better. I genuinely can't decide whether it's better for them to be like, oh, Simon and Garfunkel, everyone's heard of them, or like, this was in the charts yesterday, so it's the new like thing or whatever. I don't know what's worse them trying to do. Regardless, he says, a few weeks ago, you challenged me to a match at WrestleMania, but since you won't come down here, you know, let's go. Let's have a match. And Finn's like, I'm heading to WrestleMania. Edge is like, shut up. You know, he talks about his history of WrestleManias recently. He's running out of time in his career. Finn pulled the Judgment Day out from under him, but he admitted he made it better. That's an understatement. Because he leaned into what making them what they are, bitter malcontents. He said...
And stuff like that is why Finn Balor made it better.
Yeah.
He said, you made me say something I never say. I quit. And then you still bashed Beth Skull in. And all the boys are like, yeah, we did that, didn't we? You tried to make my life a living hell. You've accomplished it. There's only one way this can end. At WrestleMania, Edge versus Finn Balor inside Hell in a Cell. Balor's not smiling. He says, gets all serious. Says, I've been to hell before and it spit me out because I'm a fish. No, he spit me out because he couldn't handle my demons. I'll see you at WrestleMania.
A fish and a cat.
I'll see you at WrestleMania. But until then, and he goes to set Rhea and Dom and Damian Priest on them, and they go and beat up Edge. And I was like, is he literally got no mates backstage? But thankfully, here comes Loomis, Gargano and Candice because they've got the match in a second.
Can you imagine hanging out with Edge?
Well,
these days, Jesus Christ, a bit intense.
What time's Christian getting here?
It's a real damning indictment on Gargano and his lot, right? Because they're his mates, out to make the save. But he's not theirs. Match after the break, Edge is gone. He's like, I'm not sticking around for these. Thanks for helping that, but now, sort of. Like, I really like this. Really, really like this. Some of it was exposition heavy. Mm-hmm. One of them WWE, let's recap the feud. But I think there's been a bit of that lately where it's Triple H flexing a bit. Oh, I've booked some long-term stories, and here we are. Like, I think there's a bit of a celebratory air about being able to recap stuff that's actually made logical sense from end to end to end. What I did like, as a couple of added details, was Finn Balor juggling, selling fear, but potentially promising a purple demon for WrestleMania as a heel. That's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Demon's dead now. It was a fish. You can do a heel demon all you like. It was a fish. They killed it, right? But Edge talking about being honest about his WrestleMania history since 2020 was quite effective, I thought. He got stacked up like a piece of garbage against Roman Reigns.
It was a great match.
Brilliant match, but like that was his big moment and he blew it, basically. Talking about the screens and these things that are recent enough, but to Edge are everything. Because he comes back at that Rumble and basically has the rug pulled for 3 years. So I quite like that as a logical reason why it's about time, Finn, in this feud, I'm actually allowed to celebrate. And I'm going to get it there, and I'm going to get my vindication. I believed it. I believe that this is Edge's vindication, all the cheesiness aside, and Balor bouncing off the Judgment Day, reacting to Edge's nonsense. Like, I was joking, but there's the illustration of how this Judgment Day has worked and Edge's didn't, like, laid bare. But I thought you just had, like, all the right components here to make this Hell in a Cell feel justified rather than, have we got out left that we want to do for this WrestleMania? Like, slapping a stip on it. It didn't feel like that. I kind of believed it.
Hell couldn't handle my demons.
Getting there.
Oh my God.
That was like the most cringeworthy line I think I've heard on Raw. And there was something else more cringeworthy later on. Like I was like, ugh, that sounded like terrible. Like absolutely terrible. Like wordplay. Ugh. The idea that Ed, like, Balor's trying to get serious. It's one of those things where it looped so far around that it just became Edge's Judgment Day patter. So I'm seeing double here. Four things that make my arsehole itch. So I did not like the segment, to be honest.
Balor before that, in fairness to that, yeah, because the contrast between Balor, you know, like every year now, there's these wrestlers that are forced to go out there and just bend over for the WrestleMania sign. Oh, yeah. Please, can I go to WrestleMania? Finn Balor doing, well, I guess I'm going to WrestleMania, lads. Like, I thought he took the piss out of that quite effectively. Yeah. So, yeah, to see it convert, I'll accept that. But, yeah, Purple Demon, isn't it?
Yeah,
Purple Demon. Or Purple Cell, maybe. Purple everything.
Yeah.
Double Alter Bridge.
So then it was Gargano and Loomis versus Priest and Dominic Mysterio. Loomis is at wrestling Priest. He brings in Gargano. Priest cuts him off with a snake eyes. Dominic came in and used the Three Amigos and went for a 619. Missed it, so Gargano hit him with a slingshot spear. Loomis comes in and cleans house. Spinebuster, leg drop on Pierce. That gets a two count. They keep being like, look at him. He's a bit weird because he pops up and does this stuff. And I'm like, Dominic rolled Loomis up. He put his feet on the ropes, but Candice LeRae pushed them off. So obviously that brings in Mammy. They fight on the floor. Rhea drops Candice headfirst onto the barricade. And there's a little moment between Loomis and Rhea Ripley. But in comes Priest to take his head off with a clothesline. He rolls Dexter Loomis back inside. Flatliner. Dom hits a frog splash. 1-2. Gargano dies in the last second to break it up. It's a super kick on Priest. Suicide dive. Loomis puts him in a head and arm choke, and it looks like he's got the match won, but Priest blind tags himself in and hits Loomis with a big kick and south of heaven for the 1-2-3.
Say this right. It wasn't just effective for me as a Judgment Day mark because the building were loud for it, and I think it's a compliment to the Judgment Day act and the fact they're all in these WrestleMania programs and they're clearly deserve the spot. Like, there's this meritocracy booking that the Judgment Day have got such a big WrestleMania coming up. And that was a kind of stark realization of Gargano's run because, yes, he got the win last week, presumably to create the reason for this tag, but they were the designated jobbers. Yeah, it was Loomis losing, but like, they're the designated loser crew. Candice LeRae got, like, dropped on the barricade with relative ease by Rhea Ripley. This was a match for the benefit of the Judgment Day. Dominic Mysterio, it was more than just the Three Amigos into the 619. He did the like the somersault senton thing over the top rope and is off the back. And he did there was something else he did. He tied three together, basically. Three Eddie Guerrero spots, one by one by one, off the back of him saying to Ray at the weekend, like, I wish Eddie was my dad, which has been the subtext with the growing the hair and cheating and stealing and all that kind of thing anyway. So I thought that was quite nicely done because this is probably the time, feeding into the promo later on, this is probably the time to, like, let's see what Dominic Mysterio's got. Like, it isn't just going to be this comedy, oh my God, we're finally getting the father and the son match. At some point in the match, Ray, as the ultra-sympathetic babyface, has got to sell for something proper from Dominic. And I just thought he showed just enough while still being a coward that was going to get beat without Damian Priest there. So I thought they measured Dominic's contributions to this spot on as well.
This was the... Given the fact that he's primarily worked Impact Wrestling, and then when he became a real character in NXT, it was Empty Arena and then Capital Wrestling Center, and then he's appeared and debuted on Raw to minimal fanfare. This was the loudest match, given the amount of fans and how, you know, genuinely into it they were for some of it. This is the loudest match in recorded history that Dexter Loomis has ever worked, and it was like 2¾ stars and missed its peak. It
wasn't for him.
Aye. And he did the jizzob as well.
Kathy Kelly's waiting backstage earlier in the day to interview Miz. Before that can happen, though, in comes Chad Gable. He's worried. Where's Otis? And Miz is like, why don't you make some flyers? And Chad's like, that's a great idea. Heads off. And Kathy Kelly's asking Miz if he's considered having a co-host for WrestleMania. It's an interesting tease. But never mind all that bollocks. Trish Stratus getting her ass kicked by Damage Katarl.
I mean, do we just cover this now? Damage, because it never makes it to the ring, does it really? Damage Katarl,
exactly.
Battered Trish, and then Trish.
Later on, there's a bit with Kathy Gellin doing something and Becky and Lita going like, out of way, Kathy, we're going to the trainer's room. And then later on, I'll just get the thing now, actually, if I can. No, that's the bit where they push her out of the way and say... Here we go. She's interviewing the tag champs and Trish. And Becky Lynch just basically said Damage Katarl's going to get their head kicked in. There's your update. Lita says, if you're trying to divide and conquer us, you've got another thing coming. And Strata says, I've been hit a lot harder than you've hit me. All you managed to do is piss me off.
weak in terms of representation, I would say. Like, I don't, this angle with a different set of wrestlers, when you're just desperately trying to create some sort of narrative tension, not that bad. But it's Trish and Lita out there, man, and it's Bayley wrestling what should be a dream match. And this is Becky Lynch's WrestleMania thing. This is such pedestrian mid-card stuff, and it's not even really disguising itself as bigger. Now, you know, like, because Becky Lynch is in it and you've got these stars, nobody would call for this as one of the main events of the night, but you could certainly present it as one of the big matches and just try and fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
They gave up faking it here for me. This was acknowledged as what it was.
Unforgivably bland, formulaic, professional wrestling storytelling with no spark, verve, buzz, heat, any of these cool things that make wrestling cool. This has got none of them, and Triple H is a failure as a booker.
Certainly with the women's division.
Mm.
More on that later.
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
Then we got the face-to-face between Brock Lesnar and Omos. They shot this brilliantly in terms of having MVP just look tiny next to Omos as they made their entrance. MVP gets on the mic and says, "You're going to regret what you did to me a couple of weeks ago. Brock, you're a talented wrestler. You're a terrible tactician, though. You made a mistake in agreeing to fight the 7'3", 400-odd pound Omos." Before he can bang on anymore, Lesnar's music hits. Brock makes his way to the ring. We get a holy chant, and Omos does the thing where he just holds his fist right next to Brock Lesnar's face. Lesnar says, "That's a big hand, man." And I did like the weird sort of flexing here of like, we're going to do a handshake, Sid. We're just going to do a normal handshake. But because Omos has got such a big hand, not only did he put his hand out, he like splayed his fingers to make his hand look even bigger when Lesnar put his hand in
worker.
There.
When it comes to giants, WWE, it's the Andre the Giant thing. Remember the handprint t-shirt? Yeah. WWE love hand stuff. Remember like the Big Show? It's a typewriter. It's six frying pans taped together. Like they love hands of giants. That is WWE mind is what illustrates the size of a man.
This is the next stage from looking at your hands.
Yeah.
Looking at someone else's hands.
It's a picture of Andre with the beer.
Oh, yeah.
And it looks like one of those like 150 mil cans of pop you can get. Or that came with all the rage back in the day. And it looked like one of those, but it's actually a normal size can.
The guy in the
Simpsons. Get away with that, by the way. He's like, "I finished it, brilliant."
And that would just get more.
Yeah. I think they were made.
So false economy from an idiotic kid.
So little kids could have like pop in their lunchboxes. It's that small. They're probably too little to be drinking that much sugar with the dinner. But we're not, so send us cans of sugary drinks, please.
Well, I'll take 150 mil, Mountain Dew.
I will take a lot of pitch blacks.
Get rid of that, was it? They have 5-hour energy.
Oh, I don't think any of that, yeah.
Get rid of that, Mountain Dew pitch black.
Five cans of Mountain Dew pitch black.
They do the handshake, but of course it's the whole, we can all have a pull and a push a bit. Let go. No. So Lesnar stamps on his foot, goes through a suplex, but he can't do it. Omos fights out, and I wish this was one of our filmed podcasts. Clotheslines Lesnar over the top rope, which I think they tried to correct this later, didn't they? And then Eddie was like, "Well, picture of him clothesline," and then just Lesnar being on the floor, like scene missing, Lesnar on the floor. It didn't work. It was the only spot they needed to do. And if anything, it made me more excited about their WrestleMania match.
This is it, right? It feels like we're taking a victory lap because, like, wrestling Twitter and a lot of people that listen to this podcast might be included in that, I don't know, turned on this match kind of before it existed, the idea of Brock Lesnar versus Omos. Like, he's going to answer the challenge next week. That! Whereas we were kind of in favourite all along, and I was just watching this going like, dub, dub, E. So were the fans in the building, by the way. Like, all I want to look at is how, like, Brock's nose only reaches almost his nipples. And what did he fail to do here? Pick him up. And what's he going to do at WrestleMania? Pick him up. I'm a simple man sometimes. And, like, Brock, to be fair, right, it's even funnier that, like, in hindsight, that he would sell a bit of fear on camera to Omos, but wouldn't sell Bray Wyatt behind the scenes. Like, that's amazing. Like, just to get as a sort of get into Brock Lesnar's head, or indeed a critical analysis of the Bray Wyatt persona. But this was as effective a sales pitch, in spite of the clumsiness, because Omos is going to have to, like, throw him about or something.
Mm.
So Brock needs to be ready to go for a bit more clumsiness on the night before he gets to hit him with a frigging German in an F5. How could you not want to watch this?
I don't know how you could not want to watch it. I'm going to be massively on the edge of my seat watching this. It's Hogan Andre stuff. We were just reviewing Rampage. Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from. The magic of the Riho Nyla thing, even though it felt a bit bleak because of the atmosphere, is she's trying to do something at first. She's telling you she can't do it. She relies upon the crowd support to then get the energy and the fire to do it, and then she bloody does it, and because Nyla's much bigger than her, it looks amazing.
Oh, the Northern Lights suplex.
Yeah.
That's every time.
Fucking wrestling, baby. And I want to see Lesnar. I can't bloody do it. No, I can't. And look at this. He's like 8 foot bloody five, and he's going to get suplexed. German
man. You know, The Rock's flip sell off the stunner? Almost can't fall that way off his neck because the ring's not big enough to capture his legs. He just go over the top rope.
And there's a bit of me as well. I never want people to get hurt, obviously. The bit of me that wants almost to go a bit Braun Strowman and accidentally clip Brock and Brock to go, oh, we're fighting now.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's so good that. I also rewatched the, I think it was just shared on Twitter the other day, the Survivor Series Jericho Shane bit with the Jericho Pie-Tune podcast discussion about it, where he's like, I got in the ring, he potatoed me 3 times. I got outside, I flipped out, I got back in, he potatoed me again, so I drop kicked him. Said, calm down. I'm so excited for this match.
I can't wait. Like, I'll be made a fool of if this is absolutely rubbish, but I don't think there's a version of this I won't enjoy.
No. Yeah. I don't care. I just want these big lads to chuck each other about a bit. Then it was time for Cody Rhodes versus LA Knight.
Yeah!
Get him on that card, one way or another. A bit bad for Damian Priest as well when we were talking about all the Judgment Day being involved in Mania.
I'd like to think he's busy as a result of that. Like, he's going to be great.
Well, yeah.
Stealing the show maybe at ringside with, like, Ray and Dom maybe, I don't know.
Nice brawl on the floor between these two. Cody goes up top, but Knight catches him up there and superplexes him. I was a bit terrified as they went for that one, to be honest, because it didn't look like they were completely set.
Yeah.
But fine, Cody, they go to a break. Cody's back in control when we come back. Delayed vertical superplex. Well, he's going for that, but Knight escapes and hits him with a DDT. But Cody makes his comeback. Gold dust punch, disaster kick. Gets into it with LA Knight, who goes for the blunt force trauma. But Cody hits a top rope springboard Cody cutter and then the crossroads for the 1-2-3.
Something I've always wondered about WWE in the last sort of 20 years is how kids could possibly stick with it, because kids' television actually like really rewards you for following the rules of storytelling at the most basic level, and WWE doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cody Rhodes could be like, to use the word that's popular at the moment, a generational star in that sense, because I feel like kids getting into wrestling will remember Cody is their first hero. This was a good, not great professional wrestling match. But God damn it, didn't Cody look like a great professional wrestler winning it?
Yeah.
This reminded me of my favourites when I was younger.
Yeah.
Just getting the job done really efficiently. Here's your best bits. Here's your action. Like, LA Knight's no slouch, but they've got it done. You can rely on them. Fans back winners. Cody Rhodes is clearly a winner. And I mean, like, we'll get to the promo afterwards. Mm-hmm. But like, as far as matches that exist as nothing more than backdrops to big money promos, this was sort of perfect television fare.
Yeah, they did absolutely everything they need to do on the simplest terms imaginable, and it was to the credit of the match. Like, the basics done right to a point where even I, with a ridiculous standard, would go, you know what, good bit of business that needed to be done. Glad he did it in that way. They elicited a kind of tension that I don't necessarily think was worked at times, but I still felt something watching it.
Cody does things to me, man. I saw a clip on Twitter this morning and I realised immediately all someone's done there is it's either from just before this match or maybe the dark match or maybe just another Raw, to be honest. All it was him climbing up to the top rope, posing for a photo and then jumping down. But they'd reversed it. So it looks like he goes from a standing position in the ring to on the top rope with barely any like vertical, or whatever it's called. And because it's Cody, I was like, oh yeah, I guess he can just do that.
Yeah.
I guess he's just superhuman. Because they're presenting him so well here. Let's talk about this promo. So Cody gets a mic and he says, I keep hearing all these warnings from Heyman and people saying I should stay out of the bloodline business. I don't work for you. I don't work for them. I don't work for Heyman. If I want to stand side by side by Sami Zayn, I can do that. If I want to fight alongside Kevin Owens, I can do that too. I hear Mr. Heyman telling me to not make it personal. What a joke. It's been personal since I first appeared on this show at 21 years old in front of these same cameramen. Personal is when he's fighting back the tears on a weekly basis and he puts on a suit of armor, which is his suit, because he thinks he's somebody, but he does not because he thinks he's somebody, but he wants to be somebody.
I like it when he takes that suit off these days.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Baddie.
He says,
baddie.
Heyman talks about acknowledging Roman Reigns. Well, I do, but Roman Reigns, you need to acknowledge me. I'm not perfect, but my time since I've returned has been perfect. I'm undefeated. I grew up thinking I was a prince in this industry, but I've got no crown, no chip on my shoulder, no master sword, no title. On April 2nd, when the sun goes down on Hollywood, it's going to be going down on Roman Reigns' generational run. April 2nd is for all that's followed me to this end. April 2nd, I've waited my whole life. I'll wait no more. I'll pin Reigns. I'll become the first Rhodes ever to say he's undisputed WWE Universal Champion.
There is but one AEW promo I would say is better than this, and that's Cody Rhodes in WWE. I kind of believe that this was the company that in AEW that he set up and had the free reign to cut promos of this quality as often as he wanted. Maybe not as often as he wanted, but like a lot. He was always going to be a featured player. And yet we had the Chris Jericho one that Sid has like lovingly written about in his book and has referenced, and is just a magic piece of business that probably goes beyond this one, to be honest. But otherwise, I can't think of a promo beyond that in AEW that Cody cut that was as good as this and as effective as this. And the fact he has the power to do it is what amazes me, because we know the story at this point. We know all the beats. He's kind of, Cody's put them in place from the Raw after he returned after WrestleMania. So it would be really easy. And this was sort of a problem in AEW, to kind of feel like he's going over old ground and he's repeating it and he's starting to feel like a cliche. And yet, it's dark art stuff for me, because he's tweaking it just enough that he seems to know exactly where he is in the build and where he fits into the Bloodline saga and where he fits into people's hopes and the expectations that they put him on him. It's really exciting that he was like telling people he was going to win and then dropping in there that he's undefeated. So now the stakes for him beyond it, like losing, is not just winning the title, like not winning the title, it's losing something else. So he's almost putting something up against Roman beyond this dream, the dream of his father and all that kind of thing, which was a detail they haven't touched on yet. It's easy to assume because he's not been around that long, but all the same, why not mention it? And I just thought his delivery and his timing and his pacing. I love the constantly hitting the date thing, like that old school thing that his dad would have taught him. Always mention the date as if you need to sell tickets to WrestleMania, but he did it anyway. You know, it was framed really nicely with the WrestleMania sign in the background every time he flexed with a point. He was doing it with his body. He was doing the Finn Balor hand thing and the abs just appeared again.
Oh my God.
Perfect. Perfect professional wrestling promo stuff, this.
This is absolutely unbelievable. And I've got this thing with Cody Rhodes where he's kind of like the main crux, wrestling-wise, of my journey as a content producer in wrestling. So I start in the office, the old office, What Culture, in June 2016, right? And that, I'll go back to that momentarily, right? So I get this dream job that I've wanted since I was 5 years old, when I used to go to John Menzies in the Metro Center when my dad was getting a car magazine and I wanted a wrestling magazine. It was WWF magazine, PWI they had in, and had these pictures of Sting, and I thought, probably should watch WCW, to be fair. I might be a bit happier. And that is always, I never wanted to be a wrestler. I always wanted to be a writer, and then for a long time, I always wanted to write about wrestling. Me and Hamlet have got this thing where we thought that the offices of Power Slam magazine would be this hallowed ground that we could one day walk and write on. And that's all I wanted to be. So I finally get there in June 2016, after, you know, doing it for free, going from undesirable to undeniable, and getting paid to do it. And then... it's a shame that wrestling sucks. I can get out a New Japan article every now and then, but I knew what I was in for, mainstream wrestling coverage. I'm not one of these idiots who would get a job like this and just think that you can write about whatever you like because you're entitled to it. And you know that there's an actual remit that you are doing here. And the trick is to get some pretty intriguing titles, right, around something that people are interested in, and then get the work to back up the sort of the hyperbole. I know what the bloody game is. It's such a shame it's 2016. Such a goddamn shame, because this is the most uninteresting wrestling has been.
Yep.
I'm at least 3 years into thinking Fed screwed forever with Vince in charge. And that's it. I can make jokes. I can tell people why it's so bad or why I think it's so bad. It'd be nice to just really love it. And then New Japan, it's just incredible. And then BTE gets me deep into its run. primarily through the brilliant comedy of Cody Rhodes, who's unbelievable on this show. And I'm thinking, Cody, because when he first left, I'm thinking, right, he'll go to TNA and he'll not do much. It's Cody Rhodes. Like, I really liked him in Battleground 2013 in particular. He was fantastic. Yet another talent squandered so badly by WWE that you'll never even think they had anything about them ever, because that's how brutally terrible the promotional machine was. And then All In happens. Things get exciting. Like, pipe dream stuff is happening in wrestling, big shows. Then AEW forms. Cody's the face of that just absolutely deranged eye rhetoric of, we're going to change things. And they did. This is my pipe dream. Billionaire funded all the wrestling I like to a level that I can't even foresee being as great as it is, because the booking at its best was so majestic, so intricate. And then Cody does the impossible again and makes WWE good through his absolutely insane level of brilliance. And this is Cody Rhodes. So he's always been that one constant, making wrestling just better and more interesting. This is one of the best promos he's ever cut. And all the way back in June 2016, okay, I'm sat on the Quayside office where it used to be. Mm-hmm. And this was deep in the early phase of WCPW. And I'm just sat at my desk. And who should walk into the door directly to my 3 o'clock but this bronzed mega god of a man, who just looks, oh my god, there's a star there, before I can even clock who it was. And it was Cody Rhodes, just, I think, doing some kind of filming, some backstage, just like very, very early, waking up, working hard, just doing something or whatever. I wasn't even in the meetings or the process of WCPW. And he was wearing a goddamn suit. And my honest to God, first, I had two conflicting thoughts at the same time. The first one was, holy shit, he looks like a star. Mm-hmm. He looks like a square-jawed, handsome, just a star who's been plucked from the screen into real life. And it's almost uncanny valley. Human beings are not meant to look like that. And I also thought, he's dressing like one because he wasn't really a star in WWE. And if I'm being brutally honest, he's trying too hard. And I don't think this whole independent thing's going to work out for him, because it was all kick pads, five stars. That was the flippish at the time. And he always wanted, from day one, the books have written about this in their book, I saw it in the goddamn flesh. He's always wearing a suit. Why is he wearing a suit? And he gave you that reason. A lot of people thought, when he first turned back up in WWE, drop that suit. You look better. You think you're better than the people who are buying the tickets. And that's not a good look for a baby face. I've never minded it personally, but I could see the criticism. And he's worn that suit as this constant reminder, as this admirable, hardworking baby face, that I just want to work harder to do what I've needed to do. And the suit line just affected me in some way, because I've seen it. And this was 7 years ago now. And look where he is now. And honestly, it's class.
That's a point as well, because wrestlers that understand the characters and like the aesthetics are a huge part of that, find ways to spin what that means. The suit was at one point a show of arrogance. Cody Rhodes, the heel, hanging around independent shows, suited and booted, was going to make him look like a fantastic arse.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when he goes
like the interloper.
Yeah, when he goes to New Japan as a heel and he's in Bullet Club, and like obviously Bullet Club is this stable full of heels, but he's in his suit rather than his Bullet Club t-shirt, and there's such a contrast to him. And Kenny is this guy you kind of want to love, really, and the differing mindsets of the two people that want control of the stable and things like that. The smart wrestlers know how to keep things that matter to them, but just change what they mean. And yeah, the way that that's like, I remember that AEW thing. I was a little bit worked by thinking like, ah, oh, mate, like, don't spin me this working class hero nonsense when you're coming out here in a suit and you're from the industry and you're billionaire backed and all sorts of stuff. I was worked by that. But him saying this now makes me want to go back and revisit those promos with him as a babyface and be like, God bless you. Like, ruffle his hair or something like he needs it, you know?
But he did legitimately, as a shoot, wear a suit virtually every single day of his life, just walking around Gateshead, time and year. It's a constant reminder of, I'm dressing to play this part because, God damn it, I'm bound and determined to play this part and I know I can do it. He's on the precipice of it now.
Just imagine walking down like Gateshead High Street and thinking, so, you know what, go great with a suit and neck tattoo and getting it done, it done here instead of over there.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Then we have a video recapping what happened last week with Rollins and Logan Paul. Bye-bye, bitch. And I'd like the weird bit of... It's the first time I've ever really noticed this, where he's like, sing along, and no one was really singing along to his song. He says, you know, oh, Logan Paul, you won the lottery last week. You landed the shot of a lifetime. You knocked me down, but if you've learned anything from me in recent years, it's that you can't keep me down. The next time, Logan, and then in comes The Miz to interrupt, and he says, I think you're a bit jealous that he was kind of able to knock you out. You've lost control of the narrative. The only thing I know is this. I'm the host of Mania. I get privileged information. And next week, Logan Paul's going to host his Impulsive podcast in the middle of the ring. And, yeah, I'll probably be on there as well, actually. In comes Baron Corbin. He says, oh, by the way, I'm available next week. Poor bastard. He's like, Logan Paul's all booked up, mate. Sorry. He's like, well, I heard you talking about like a WrestleMania co-host. And Miz is like, I've got a lot of pull, but I ain't got that much, mate. Corbin says, look, hey, Seth, I saw what happened last week. I saw he knocked you out pretty quick. You know, golden gloves and all that. I can give you some boxing lessons if you want from me. And Seth's like, I appreciate the offer, but if I'm honest, I'd rather take boxing lessons from my baby daughter. And Corbin's like, you fucking what, mate? I'll knock you out faster than Logan Paul did. I'll take your spot at WrestleMania.
Let's
have a bare knuckle fight then. and Seth says, yep, yeah, I'm down to Hoyt. And Miz says, look, you beat Rollins. Maybe I'll put in a good word with Logan Paul for you.
So this and the match is like the diet version of the Cody LA Knight thing, in that you just want to see. You haven't got Logan Paul this week, but you've got the babyface doing the babyface things to reassure you that he's ready for his big WrestleMania match. But don't know if this falls into guilty pleasure or not. I really like the trickle-down heel chicanery levels to the people that Seth is currently involved with. Logan Paul is the star, and he's the big fight at WrestleMania, and he's the... Is he the equal? Maybe. We'll have to see, but he's got a powerful punch. He's up there. You've got The Miz, who still really desperately wants Logan Paul's approval, and he's like, I'll probably be on Impulsive TV as well, actually, even though they did that great bit the other week. I told you to stop calling me.
Yeah.
Like, Logan Paul's just... These are all... It's just arsehole, pull back, another arsehole, pull back, another arsehole. And then Miz, conscious that, like, he's being, like, sort
arseholes of... Arseholes are like onions.
Yeah, that's it. Little Victorian doll of complete mid-card dickhead heels, right? So the Miz is like, oh, Logan Paul's giving me a bit of grief, and I'm trying to impress him. And then below him is Baron Corbin, who Miz can bully. He's like, can I impress you? The Miz, I want to keep going. Like, how low can we go until we get to Mustafa Ali? Like, that's what I want to know. But, like, and that's a piss take, because in babyfaces, it's the worst thing you can do. The fact that Triple H does this to babyfaces is a crime. I think there's a place for it with these heels. And because there are levels to this game, especially around WrestleMania season, and you just know that the best Corbin can hope for is the Miz's scraps, and the best Miz can hope for is Logan Paul's scraps. I sort of like it.
Mm.
And Seth, when you know what I mean? Like, Seth, you know that he's above this nonsense, and I think this is the place for that kind of nonsense.
Through the standards of impromptu bollocks, okay, this is quite cute.
Yeah.
With Baron Corbin and the boxing connection, and there's a bit in the match that I thought, you know what,
fair play for how this has come together, but we'll get to that.
Then we got Bronson Reed versus Elias. Obviously, nearly.
It's too short a skip.
I was going to say, yeah. the big story here is, of course, Rick Boogs. They're taking notes, or they didn't have to take many. Bronson Reed ran him over, rolling splash, and then hit the tsunami off the top rope for the 1-2-3.
Now to this, really. Bronson Reed, if you're a fan, Bronson Reed is for a very specific type of fan, isn't he? Like, I like him enough, but my biases are what they are, and I wish he was, like, a foot taller, maybe, to be like...
I wish he was scary. It's not nothing to do with his proportions. He just doesn't have the presence. He does not have that menacing presence of a Vader or the other wrestlers of that ilk to which he obviously aspires. Just, he's one of those that he can do things in the match that can go, but he doesn't come out where you're thinking, oh, Jesus Christ, that person he's in the ring with is knackered. It's hard to have that aura nowadays. You can go really exaggerated and be a Lance Archer and just revel in the fact that you're nasty and you're like almost like in an exaggerated comic booky way, that the way that these really unique ways in which you kill people. He isn't, even Archer doesn't have that Vader nasty Christ presence, but Bronson Reed just doesn't have that about him at all for me.
You're right, it's like an intangible menace, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yokozuna can be a big dangerous heel, but Mabel can't, even though they're both giant guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then Kathy Kelly's went outside the trainer's room for the Trish stuff, and that's when Becky and Lita push past her, and Gable's there hanging out with flyers. And then she subsequently sits down with Kevin Owens, who says, look, you know, I needed Sammy's help against the Bloodline, and now, obviously, Sammy's the one asking me for help. Given our history, I don't really want to fight alongside Sammy, but hey, good luck. Wish you all the best. And then he says, Cody, you know, appreciate everything, but stay out of my business tonight. I like the way he worded this, like, don't risk yourself for this. Concentrate on beating Roman Reigns at WrestleMania.
I love this. Kevin Owens wants to destroy the Bloodline, and he really does believe Cody can help in that cause, but he's fighting with himself over Sammy. And I believe it, and I continue to buy it. What really impressed me, there's this and another match. It's Ray and Dom. Two of the longest stories being told on WWE, the opposite of how they've told stories for years. Like, Sid has made this point before where you get the match graphic and then it's like 6 weeks of repeating the stakes because there's nowhere to go now, you know. And there's an example of this with Asuka and Bianca Belair on this show, but there's always been a lot of that in WWE. In the Bloodline Usos versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Ray and Dom, it's like the match graphics of the final development.
Yeah.
They've told the story so well. It's that graphic drop, probably week off. We know they're happening, but they've it feels like they're going to be earned when they get there. And I thought this promo was another winner for the way in which they've delayed how much you want this, like especially topped off by that main event.
Mm. Austin Theory's walking backstage, Street Profits, this is earlier on in the day, say, you're a bloody joke artist, you. And he's like, well, yeah, keep you joking, but you're going to be sacked in 2 months, basically. You're going to be unemployed. I hope not. And he said, look, at the end of the day, I got what I wanted. Big marquee match against John Cena. As for the two of you, interesting little tease here of like, who's the toughest, sort of teasing potentially a Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins, of course, singles runs. But who's the toughest out of the two of you? Who's got the backbone? Who's got the fire? Who's got the desire? I think it's you, Angelo Dawkins. It's certainly not you, Montez Ford. You're just a big bag of jokes. When you get handed an opportunity, you fall flat on your bloody face. Don't know. I think it's
he's not from Yorkshire. That's not what it is.
I know he's British bulldog. Flat on his fucking ass. I think that's where I've got that from. I wish I could relate to that, but I go straight to the top every time. You talk all about that smoke. Oh, you're going to bring the smoke. You've got smoke coming out of you or something. All you do is choke. And he says, Dawkins is like, I'm going to humble you. I'm going to cook you or something. And Theory's like, what are you doing at WrestleMania? Oh, wait, nothing. Which is quite a good arsehole thing.
Yeah. Street Profits aren't cooking, really, are they?
No.
I don't mind these teases, but they just drop them and pick them back up again. I need more consistency of this. Whatever the hell's happening with the Street Profits, you can't do it for 1 week and then
it's
just...
It's going to happen after WrestleMania. Let it play out.
Yeah.
I'm not joking.
No,
Just reminds me... Oh, sorry, you say something and I'll tell you. I'm just going to completely derail this in a second.
Didn't hit the overlap. Theory needed someone to beat, I guess. There's a bit too much of this. Guy who's going to work a big match at WrestleMania wins a match. Like, it's... the correct Dynamite formula. Too much of it.
Obvious winners, obvious losers.
Yeah, too much of it.
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to tell this story, but here we go. There is someone who will not be named who we all know who went to a wedding, and one of the guys who is kind of a bit of a knobhead said to him, "Oh, what did you think of the meal? Oh wait, you weren't invited."
Oh my god.
They were like an evening guest, one of the people that we know was an evening guest, and the other guy was like, "Oh, you weren't invited to the meal, were you?"
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good to hit heel work, as you can see here from Austin Theory.
Oh, terrific.
Anyway, afterwards we got Austin Theory versus Angelo Dawkins.
Skiff.
Yep.
Yeah, skiff. Fair enough. You won with the eight out.
Possible match with no heat.
Can't wait for John Cena.
Anyway, enough all that. Now time for this.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The five-star review. Nailed it!
Otis.
This week's five-star review is brought to you by Andrew from Brooklyn. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review, you can either leave us a five-star review like Andrew has done on Apple Podcasts, or leave us a five-star review on Spotify. Screenshot it.
Need the proof.
And then email it to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. Drew, as he calls himself in the review, writes, "Hello, gents. I first..."
Could be his name.
Yeah, I'm confused because he put Andrew at the top and then he put Drew at the end. So.
Well, he obviously prefers to be called Drew, but for professional reasons, he want to be Andrew.
Maybe like the Nord Dog, he went to anger management training and now he goes by Drew. Yeah. He used to be Andy.
Anyway, he writes, "Hello, gents. I first found What Culture about 2 years ago by watching Simon's Ups and Downs video, so I wouldn't have to suffer through Raw or SmackDown.
Correct.
It was more often than not a massive waste of time. I found your absolute gem of a podcast a little over 2 months ago. It's only grown on me over the weeks. I didn't know how to feel about Sidgwick's harsh analysis, which 98% of the time I knew deep down he was right about. But I realised the more podcasts I listened to that it was a necessary aspect of the show, especially to balance out Wilborn, who has massive amounts of positivity, usually too much like myself. Hamlet is probably who we should all strive to be with his wrestling takes.
Yeah.
Since it always feels like he's level..."
No!
Well, yeah. Wait, he does make a good point here.
He's already made one.
"It always feels like he's level-headed, which makes sense."
Yeah.
But I really do love when...
So that's what I mean. This is the Baron Corbin Miz.
I really do love when him and Wilborn go off the rails excited about something. For my five-star review, I have a horrifying curiosity to hear the comments on this segment where Lashley stole Rusev's wife and showed up on the big screen from a hotel bed to taunt him about it. P.S. I only chose this because I pop anytime you guys read the thirsty comments and try to keep your composure. Have a great one, guys." Thank you, Drew.
Cheers, Drew.
Yeah, thank you, Drew. To the earlier point about how WWE just basically create a match and then repeat the same story beat every single week, that was pretty much it the day that Bobby Lashley necked on with Lana on a stage. But as Drew was only listened 2 months ago, and our archives, come on Acast, are not necessarily going right back to the beginning. If you're listening to our podcast at the time, we'll tell you then what I'll tell you now. This was because WWE were getting YouTube numbers out the ass for it. There was a period where Bobby Lashley and Lana, this segment, or a version of this segment, happened every week. Like 2 million next day on YouTube. By far and away, the hottest thing on the show in terms of like the way people were watching in those chunks online, to the point where they thought, well, don't back down, double down, and we'll have a wedding. And it killed it.
You'd think that it would impact the far more lucrative stream of TV ratings.
Yeah. And it just, the wedding didn't pop off, did it?
No.
And it kind of...
did all right.
And it was a mess as well, wasn't it?
It was half an hour long or something like that, and it kind of killed it all. But this was definitely in the period where they were checking their... like Eric Bischoff checking the ratings on a Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
That was WWE looking at these YouTube ones for Lana and Bobby Lashley.
So yeah, I think the match was going to be Rusev and Randy Orton maybe. And this was the time when Randy Orton was just mates with King Corbin. And there was that great image. I don't think it's from this one. I don't think it's from this.
When?
It's from this
I covered this professionally. And I still can't remember like 4 years ago because WWE is so... chaotic.
In my head, what united them was taking the piss out of Rusev, because this wasn't the first time.
That rings a bell.
Because there's that photo.
It was very contrived.
There's that great photo of, I think it's like Rusev's in the ring, and that's when like Lashley comes out and just necks on with Lana, basically. And they're just on the stage, stood next to each other, like going, and just like giggling together. And then obviously, presumably this week, Rusev was like, "I'm going to kick your ass for laughing at me."
Yeah. So Orton had nout to do. Because him and like FTRKO go to pass it on. Finished feuding with the New Day because of Kofi and Randy's deal over of the...
Oh, God.
Yeah, all that.
So yeah, Rusev's in the ring when Lashley appears on the Big Tron and he's in a robe and he says, "Rusev, doesn't look like you're having a good time at all, man. You don't look even nearly as comfortable as I do. I mean, look at me. The robe, it looks familiar, doesn't it?" That's right, in Jesus Christ. "It's your robe, Rusev." "You do notice one thing, that if I'm wearing your robe, then I'm probably at your house. And if I'm at your house, then I'm probably in your room. And if I'm in your room and I'm like, where's this
shagging your wife?"
"Shagging at your wife. I'm a bit confused here, so you might be able to explain something in a minute. If I'm in your room, this has got to be your bed." And he like, gets in, takes the robe off. He's like, very nice. And he goes, "So this is your bed, Rusev. What exactly are we missing here? Let me think about this." I'm just verbatim reading this, by the way. "Let me think about this. Something you're missing a lot." And in comes Lana, and she's wearing like this kimono, and she slips it off and slides in next to him, and you get like the sexy music starts playing. And she says, "Rusev, everything we own is now in my name. Oh, and by the way, we don't have joint checking accounts anymore. It is all mine."
What a necessary detail. "I've done the administration."
And Bobby says, "You see, Rusev, you should have been spending your money on Lana instead of sending your money back home to your family in Bulgaria." All right, this is the bit I need your help with, Sage. Lana says, "Oh, Rusev, it looks like you are not having fun. But I am. And Bobby says, "No, we are." What's going on?
What's happening is that they're in bed and they are about to, like, fuck each other's brains out. Now, I can't... Oh. Maybe they're not going, like, absolute hammer and tongs. We're fucking brutal, and you just need to press, and you're just, like, in that devouring state. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't fuck like that. Maybe the, like, slow, sensual, like, just building and building and building, and the payoff, you know, maybe they're not just fucking tearing each other's clothes off. It's like pressing against. It's good stuff. But they're about to have sexual intercourse, right. no matter, you know, the position, no matter just, like, the approach, no matter, like, you know, just how rough or soft and sensual it is. They are about, Bobby Lashley is about to put his cock in Lana's, like, either mouth, ass, or pussy. That's what's going to happen.
Right. So there's a bit here I got really confused, and I called you over because I was, because there's been nothing here from, I can't remember what the commentary team was at this point.
Jerry Lawler, Dio Madden, and Vic Joseph.
Right.
Christ.
I know, man.
It was a weird time.
Yeah.
But so Lana is removing her bra whilst Bobby pulls some face, like, ooh, in the background.
He's loving them.
And at this point, right.
Loving that back, loving them tits.
So there's no commentary, nothing's been said at all.
Anything that you couldn't previously see, he's loving. Yeah. Smile on his face shows it.
Ooh. Someone, and I said this to you guys, it sounds like it comes from behind the camera, who's in this hotel, in their house filming this. Someone just goes, "Oh my God, guys."
I think that's someone in the comment section about a busted nut. Like, but we'll get to that imminently.
Least surprising twist ever. It was Jerry Lawler.
Actually, that is surprising because Lana's in her mid to late 20s.
So
stupid old bastard probably trying to put his hands to the screen. Oh.
So they giggle together and then they turn the lights out. It's just like, just faded black. Well, there we go. And it cuts back, and I forgot about the mustache as well, even though you see it at the beginning when it cuts back and he's like, "Oh, and my mustache." He's devastated. And King says, "That made me the most uncomfortable thing I've ever seen." And think of the ground that covers.
I don't want to think about the ground. I do not want to think about that and at all.
Written here, Randy Orton and King Corbin are yucking it up. So Rusev just goes bonkers, beats him up around ringside, chucks him into stairs, chucks him into the barricade, posts Orton, You're laughing at me. Machka kicks Corbin. Machka kicks Orton into the crowd, and there you have it.
Orton's like a, 14-time or whatever world champion, and he was, right, okay, I understand that we can just tell people that you're great again in about 2 months, but can we just have the guys getting cheated on to kick your ass because we'll just need tits on this TV program again because the ratings aren't very good.
You know, but in The Office where Michael Scott kind of just marginalizes and almost like dehumanizes Pam, just describing her physical appearance and how she should look and how she should wear her hair, and then like says, yeah, no, but seriously, she's a gifted employee and absolutely fantastic receptionist. We'd be lost without her, but I would never say that to her face. That's like watching the booking of Rusev. Like, no, he's absolutely fantastic as an ass kicker. Like, watch him batter this guy. Why would not just let him do that?
Yeah.
I know, we've absolutely got to do his wife getting pumped by Bobby Lashley first on a big screen, and he has to cry tears through his tash. And then we'll let him, like, batter the two heels.
Yeah.
Just let him do that.
Yeah, no.
It's like, even AEW, like, he goes, he's playing a lot of video games here. Can he not just do that?
So we go to the comments section. Yeah. Once again, these do not reflect the views of myself, Dad Boys, anyone watch Ultra Wrestling. It starts off all right. There's a few sort of people who are look very naive, whatever it is, 3 years, like 3 years later, 4 years later, something like that. Jonathan Scott. Now this is PG-13. Here we go. Here you are. Yeah, by the way,
you can watch anything.
Yeah.
Just remembered.
It's time to play the game! Time to play the game!
Did it, did it. Guess the horny comment.
And double... I haven't got time. this isn't going to be as high as you anticipate, but how many views has this got on YouTube, by the way?
40 million.
No! A lot less.
Give him a clue to win the quiz.
10 million.
Closer, 4.4 million views. But yes, can you guess?
You're talking rubbish then, aren't you?
What do you want to take a punt at with these comments?
Okay, I think, play the game. Guess how many comment. I wish it was Lashley's cock.
There isn't one. I was looking for them.
I was just thinking, I wish I was the robe.
Yeah, no, there's
still featured there, you know.
There's no I wish I was in this, I don't think. There is, well. One of the ones I genuinely appreciated was from Shader John, who just writes, Aiden English was right, which is a nice bit of LTST there, despite the fact that it wasn't that case at all.
If you're a WWE character and you're referring to a WWE female who's not known for their in-ring prowess, as a dress girl, you'll get proven right through the horrible mechanisms of the creative eventually.
Yeah, I'm not right now, but I will be in... I've just picked this one out, and this isn't to call out this person specifically. It was just emblematic of quite a lot of people. Crystal Roddy. Well, if this leads to a huge Rusev push, I'm going to be okay with it. Did it?
No.
Of course it didn't.
Then we start getting into it. Now we're into the... Here we go. Mo. In my opinion, Lana is the hottest woman walking the earth. Okay.
Exactly what I'd expect from a gentleman like Mo.
Yeah.
He's doing all right. It was nice to chat about him the other week, wasn't it?
Burned potatoes. Right. More like bony Lashley.
Even a pun. More like Nobby Lashley would work better.
Could have called him the Ball Mighty.
Yeah, yeah. Nobby Lashley, the Ball Mighty. Yeah.
Bony.
The Master Blaster, is that, isn't he?
Ryan Hamrick writes, oh, a night with you would be like winning the lottery. Oh.
That's all right.
That's okay.
Is this all right? From Andre Shame. Oh, someone deserves a spanking.
Oh, it's just Blaster Lashley.
Blaster Lashley, yeah.
I'm sure he did.
Jack. I'm not going to give Jack's surname here.
Why would I have your real name?
Hey, Lana. I'll just check the comments, Bobby, see what they're saying. Hey, Lana. I love your feet.
It's fine.
Yeah, not kink shaming.
Can you show me the soles without the socks, please?
That's fine. Not really.
Not shaming, but going in YouTube.
Yeah.
Comments to do it is weird.
How's this one for you?
Probably bad.
Alan writes. It's the little bit of the end. Oh, I'd love to have that ass sitting on my face for at least a good hour.
It's like, it's 51 minutes now. I'm getting a little bit bored.
This bloody lava go off.
It's getting a bit uncomfortable, this. No, I said at least 1 hour. It's 51 minutes. You got the point. No?
Get the gist, right?
That ass always like...
Right, and then the final comment you heard me react to in the office.
Yeah, earlier. No, I got very scared. Yeah. I got the Tuesday scaries about what it actually is.
So this is not referring to use myself, the Daddy Boys, anyone at What Culture.
I'm assuming this is going to get edited out. So quickly find another comment because you usually build up the last comment.
Obi writes, "It's not like it's just a bit overkill." He writes. You are a ton of sexy honey running over a glass of pure heaven's wine. Your sight smells awesome. I can't wait to lick you up till no drop is left, my hot, juicy vanilla ice cream.
Oh, no!
Hey, it wasn't as bad as you thought.
No,
it was
pretty bad. I mean, I feel disgusted to my core.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fedora cap guy.
It's comments feel like they're on you, don't they? Like,
yeah.
You're a ton of sexy honey. It's not going to be enough. You're a ton of sexy honey running over a glass of pure heaven's wine.
That'd be like, wouldn't you just crush the glass in that case? Wouldn't it just be like, you wouldn't even taste the wine? And so even if it comes from...
What a waste of pure heaven's wine. You would assume it's really good wine.
Exactly.
Oh, but you come in the pub, mate. No, sorry, mate. I've got to lick up every drop till there's no drop left of hot, juicy vanilla ice cream, so I probably won't make it out tonight, lads. So thanks, Drew. Thanks for the suggestion
there. Thanks, Drew.
Hope you got what you were hoping for here.
How long's left?
I can't remember. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, though, as five-star review as part of the Raw review. You can do so on Apple Podcasts, or you can leave us a five-star review on Spotify. Screenshot it.
Need the proof.
And then email it to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. We return to Raw, where Kathy Kelly's with Paul Heyman, who gets cut off, Kathy does. And he says, we've got a problem. And that problem's name's Kevin Owens. But tonight we demonstrate we solve all problems. And tonight's problem is going to be solved by... and as for Cody, he thinks the truth's going to set him free. It's only going to imprison his mind to make stupid mistakes like making this personal. Of course, it's already personal to Rhodes. That's what makes Rhodes such a compelling and intriguing character. But to make this personal to Roman Reigns by mockingly acknowledging him on TV, what a schmuck. Cody Rhodes, you're going to have a chance to acknowledge him next week on Raw because Roman Reigns is going to be here and you can decide whether you're a challenger or a problem because I assure you, Cody, you are a problem that Roman Reigns would love to personally solve.
Tremendous. Looking forward to that for next week's preview.
Yeah, I didn't think much of this promo from Heyman, to be honest. It was more like an advert.
Marginally better than a graphic, but only marginally. Would you rather have had a graphic?
I'd rather have had a graphic. Roman's here.
Rey Mysterio comes out, of course, going into the Hall of Fame this year. And he does get to speak this time, briefly. He says, this is the biggest honour of my life. This isn't just my award. It's for all of us, everybody who helped me build up my career. Made it from the fans. Thank you, guys. This is an award for all of us, like I said. And then, of course, here comes Dominic Mysterio to interrupt. And he says, well done, Dad. You finally made it into the Hall of Fame. You deserve it, too, because you put your whole life into this business. I hope it was worth it, because you did it at the expense of me, Dad. You chose all of these fans, each and every one of them, instead of being there for me. How does that feel? My eighth grade promotion, you were nowhere to be found. You were too busy at bloody WrestleMania. And then he says, and then when I turned 16, you said you'd get me a new car. All my friends had new cars, all had new Mercedes. And you bought me a BMW. It wasn't even an M-Series, you prick. You're a sad, ugly excuse for a father. Yeah, you're a sad, ugly excuse for a man. I want a match with you at WrestleMania. And Ray's like, how many times I keep saying this to you, Dom? I'm not going to fight my own son. I love you. I always will. No match. Dom's like, huh, this is your guy? And he's walking out at this point, Ray. You're going to walk away? Do what you do, Ray. You run away. You run away from Raw. You run away from family. You run away from me. The only thing you taught me, Ray, is what not to be. I thought this was great from Dom.
Ray's acting was good.
Yeah.
You're not meant to be able to be as understated and naturalistic almost as this. I was shocked.
Mm.
This storyline's great. What is it going to take?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Storytelling.
I think he's going to, like, batter Conan. Like, Conan, they're bringing him in finally. He's going to get Ray's over the moon. I can't believe he gets to induct me. And then, like, you see, you know, like when Kane pushed Zack Ryder off the stage or something. Like, yeah, listen to your podcast, Ray! And that off he goes, something like that. Just something really unnecessarily cruel that Ray has no choice. This week.
Dom was getting the watch chance and he did well here.
Well, I think, again, I said this on the SmackDown review, but like, I still worry for the Dominic character post Rey Mysterio. Maybe less so because the Judgment Day are an overact, but this character still kind of relies on... The beating heart of this character is this match. So post-WrestleMania,
this
it could
be
tricky.
This is the best he'll ever do in this business.
Yeah, and, but like his performance...
That's more than, you know, Eric Watts ever did.
Yeah, but his performance level has like improved tremendously from when it was more of a punchline.
David Sammartino.
Yeah, like we've gone through irony and this stuff's just pretty good.
Mm.
The details specifically, the M-Series was a nice gag, but I actually thought the WrestleMania one was better because of all, like, it's fair, wrestlers miss birthday parties and family occasions and sometimes it's like, if Dominic had said, you went to some, like, backwater town wherever, yeah, that doesn't hit as hard.
Yeah.
Like, dad should work WrestleMania. That's how you get the life you get. Of all the shows that you can miss, it's that one. Like, it's WrestleMania and I love that he targeted that specifically.
Then we got...
Bloody relevant as well.
Yeah.
This bloody coming up, isn't it?
It is. You know, I never even put those two things together.
Then it was time for Baron Corbin versus Seth Rollins.
Transcribing other promos and YouTube.
Yeah, well, what came next was more important, to be honest, than changing that round. Because in the match, Corbin jumps Rollins... Rollins makes a comeback, sends Corbin to the floor and chucks him into Miz, basically. Miz tries to get him for revenge. Rollins drops him and basically uses Miz as a springboard to stomp Corbin for the win.
I like that finish. It's funny.
I thought he was going to do both at one point, like stepping stones. And I was like, that wouldn't work, so we can hit physically. But yeah, something like you say a bit earlier. Oh, you've got a win and you're going to WrestleMania. Well done.
There was a bit of happenstance here that I was just kind of marveling at. Where on commentary, they pick the moment where the crowd are going, and Miz says, I hate that noise or that song or that sound more than anything. But in just mid meltdown, that's when Rollins pushes Corbin onto him.
Mm.
And it's a nice bit of happenstance how it worked like that because you rely upon the crowd and then these things coming together. But not so much happenstance as Seth Rollins' weird act is connected with the fans that have allowed these things to happen.
And then came the highlight of Monday Night Raw, in my opinion. Chad Gable's walking about backstage trying to find Otis, and he asks Mustafa Ali, who's got this new positivity gimmick, hashtag be positive. Never mind all that, because all you hear is this. Yes! Wow! Look at that mess! Vascularity! And you see, not Otis, but Sige.
Otis.
Doing a photo shoot with Maximum Male Models. You've got Mansoir doing the camera work. Again, Marseille just stood. And Maxine's, you know, directing traffic, if that's the right phrase to use. Gabe was like, hey, what are you doing with Otis? Wait a second. Didn't you guys have a scheduled match? I was like, thank you, Chad. But then Mansoir thankfully clarified for us. He said, actually, Chad, you little goblin. I broke my nail scrolling through Instagram today, which means we're not cosmetically cleared to compete. That match is postponed till next week. Oh, thank God, we can preview it again on the Raw preview. And Marseille says, tonight isn't about matches, Gollum. It's about match ink, and we're working on Otis's headshots. And Gable's like, hey, it's not all about, you know, clanging and banging, lifting weights. We can do some modeling if you want, Otis. Let's do some poses together. And they do pose. Like, Otis is still happy to be there with Chad. Like, yeah, get Master Gable in. And then Mansoor goes, oh, you broke my camera. Marseille says, you probably broke it with your ick. Your Sandoval-esque ick. And I was like, a bit like,
what? I actually know what the ick is.
Did you?
I know what the ick is.
I didn't know what a Sandoval.
My wife told me I have it. Not inherently. But I first became aware of this phrase, the ick. Mm. It's like a secretive word among women. Because I was bowling, right?
Yeah.
My wife told me I have it. It's not very good, but we'll work on that. But it was like, not like just in general.
Yeah.
But like, apparently it's something that like a man does. It's like, oh God, that's the ick. The ick. And I was bowling. Just with a family. Took them out. She drives. So she took us out to the South Shields bowling, and it's really fun.
The Dunes.
A couple of brewskis, do some bowling, maybe a few arcade games. Go home. Right? It's a nice time.
Love it in there. Love that building. It's
got
it all.
I love the Dunes. Got it all. Got the soft play. Got the Dunes. It's great.
It's got it all.
Good family.
Typical take, yeah.
Yes.
Can I bring stats?
Yeah. Good.
Right, okay. So I, Michael Sidgwick, go bowling. Handful, though. What happens next?
A gutter ball?
No. Strike. Hit a strike.
Yes.
Okay, all right, okay.
So I hit a strike, okay? Like fifth or sixth frame. And, you know, I just go, because it's the celebration that the kids know. And you kind of have to do it if you want to, like, do a football thing. I went, because I love the buzz of getting a strike.
We have like, what is it, pandemic, notwithstanding, like, what, 5-6 years of Christmas parties where we just mock each other with wrestler poses.
Yes.
It's exactly as nerdy as it sounds when we get strikes.
Yes.
You turn around and you do Kenny or Punk or something. Mm. Yeah.
I went, shoo! Mrs. just looked at us, give us the ick.
Oh, I love it when you do it.
Hero's hero with it being a strike as well.
Yeah.
He couldn't have been higher.
I
don't know it.
I get a feeling my wife thinks I give her the ick when I do my corrupted version of the girl.
Ah, yeah, that's the ick.
Yeah. Too late now. She's married. Marseille, says, you broke with your ick. But when he said Sandoval-esque ick, I was like, I have no idea what he's talking about here. But thankfully, Maxine says, clearly you don't watch Vanderpump Rules. Tom Sandoval is a disgusting scab on the pedicured feet of his Bambi-eyed mistress. And you are grosser than that. And he beckons Otis away whilst Chad's like, nah, actually, I know it's a bit late, but we've still got a bit of time. You can squeeze a workout in. And then you hear her go, Otis. And he's like, sorry, coach. And he leaves and Chad looks devoed.
Sid, you've been making a case for it isn't getting discussed enough that Hangman Page might be one of the best wrestlers ever.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't think it gets discussed enough that maybe Chad Gable was one of the best sports entertainers ever. Because think about what that character's been for, like, what, last year and a half? Like, shoes, please, and thank you. And, like, he just pivots ever slightly, and he's this really sympathetic guy walking backstage with flyers. Like, where's my friend?
His Alpha Academy jacket on.
His Alpha Academy, like, he's played this guy where he can basically make an awesome tag team with any wrestler you give him. That's his lore at this point. He's fantastic. The sympathy I'll have if, like, Otis turns on him properly, or the euphoria I'll feel if Otis stays with him, and this just becomes a, well, one TV match for, like, a 6 to 8 week build. All great. Chad gets all of this over them. Maximum Mermol is such a great act. I'm glad there's something.
They've got the best gag in there too early.
Yeah.
So it kind of went off a bit. But it was still fun.
Triple H never would have sanctioned his stuff on NXT, would he?
No.
He's banged game front on the main roster, but he'd never let this fly in NXT.
Yeah, it's too bloody dry.
Skulls.
Yeah.
Then it was time for Bianca Belair versus Chelsea Green.
Skip.
Yeah, I would if I could. Whew.
Belair takes most of this, understandably. Hits the picture-perfect standing moonsault. Carmella's there at ringside, of course, with Chelsea Green. She cheap shots her when the referee's distracted to allow Green to take over to take us to a break. When we come back, Belair makes her come back. Clotheslines, dropkick, stalling vertical suplex. Bianca goes to that backflip off the ropes thing that she does and knocks Carmella off the apron. That allows Green to catch her with an inside cradle for a two count, but Belair just rebounds and gets straight back up. KOD, 1-2-3, post-match, as we said on the preview. What a surprise. Carmella and Chelsea Green attack Bianca Belair, but who should come down to make the save? But the person Bianca Belair is going to be making the WrestleMania, Asuka, who high-kicks Carmella, backfists Green, clear the ring, and oh, there's the belt. And Asuka picks it up and then goes, there you go. Oh, God, take it from me. I've got it. Dances around.
Oh, that's the ick.
Yeah. And then coughs up some blue goo. Doesn't spit it on her. Not like, it's not mist being misted, but it's mist.
And so like the threat of the mist.
It's mind games, isn't it?
It's rubbish is what it is. It's an absolute disgrace. Is there a directive to the women's division to work in slow motion? What's going on? Shotzi, this match, like several other almost countless examples on TV for the past 6 months. I've seen Chelsea Green work. She's nowhere near as bad as this.
No.
Do they all get overawed by the big stage? I can't see that happening. I think they must get told I'll work a match in slow motion. Don't tell me why this happens, but this must be the case. Shotzi on NXT... Fair enough, some of the matches were like really chaotic and at times dangerous, but some of them were quite thrilling. She's a statue. She's a glorified statue. And Chelsea Green and Emma is kind of a statue. Now, I don't understand what they are telling this women's division when they agent their matches. It's the weirdest thing imaginable. Is there like a strand of sexism / misogyny here? Of, God, don't go too hard, girls.
The old Michelle McCool getting bollocked for working like a man.
Aye, because God damn it, these matches are suspiciously slow at this point. And this post-match angle, oh my God, I can't believe how the vicarious like cringe I experience watching this. Right. Yeah. She cannot be unhinged or scary. There's nothing worse. It's worse than someone trying to be funny for me. Someone trying to play unhinged. I get that cringe. You know when a joke doesn't land in your own company and you just desperately, you can't, it's more patronizing to go, than it is to just go, oh God, and just be silent. That feeling is worse for me when a WWE wrestler, specifically a WWE wrestler, tries to be unhinged or like spooky. Oh God, I hate it so much.
Felt like it went on for ages. Asuka dancing around the ring, like it just felt like I didn't know if I wanted the world to open up and swallow me or the ring to open up and swallow them, but I needed it to end. It was the ick. It was as bad as it was the last time, but made worse because at least when Asuka dribbled the goo the last time, it was a split second thing. We were kind of made to live in it here and it got no better. On the point about the matches, I think they're reaping what they sow because the crowds aren't interested. It doesn't feel like there's a great deal of motivation across either division, either show, either belt, whatever. The best spot in this entire match was Bianca Belair knocking Carmella off the apron.
It looks so fake.
I thought the opposite. I thought without touching her, because she's just got the power off that springboard that the ropes move and knock Carmella off. And I thought that was the only good bit because I just took it as she wasn't trying to hit her. She was just like, I'm such an athlete in here. I've got it all, and I can use this moment to do it rather than having to get in the way and push you down. And I was just reminded that that's what they're doing with the athlete, is this, is dribbling goo and fear eyes, and then the tag match that got booked for next week that we saw coming as soon as the Rumble had finished. That like, awful. Or as soon as Elimination Chamber, finished.
Lazy bollocks. Right, main event time, street fight between Kevin Owens and Solo Sikoa. Of course, they just start out immediately brawling. Sikoa sends Owens into the announce table. Owens sends Sikoa into the steps. Brawl continues, takes to a break. When we come back, Owens has set up 6 chairs with the seats all nicely lined up in the ring. But in the end, it's Sikoa who chucks Owens off the top rope through the chairs. Always looks like it sucks that, even though it's, you know, kind of a flat bit. At least it's not as bad as when they have to do the top bit of the chair.
The upright.
Still looks like sucks though. But clearly Owens was all right because he immediately hit a cannonball against the barricade afterwards. But they keeps fighting, fight through the crowd, fight eventually back round, go into the backstage area, into Gorilla, and who's there? Of course, the Usos. Double sick super kick to Kevin Owens. I did like the visual of them dragging him the entire way back up the ramp, back into the ring. Samoan Spike from Solo Sikoa. 1, 2, 3. He wins the street fight. The story, of course, is Kevin, you can't fight this on your own as much as you like. Thanks, but no thanks. He's left laying in the ring, and the Bloodline celebrate on the ramp to close the show.
But much better story than match for me here. Like, as a brawl, it was pretty hollow, I thought. Like, it was, oh, Raw's finished, but they've left the cameras on for the thing they're going to send the fans home happy with.
That's why
you get the big stunts, like, to make the fans make noise before they're leaving, the ones that haven't decided to beat the traffic. But I'm the same as you. Like, that visual stuck with me. So this match gave me something. I really quite like the Gorilla attack and the way to, like, have him, the excuse to drag him ceremonially right down the aisle was because they've just hit him there by the doorway to it. If you'd have done that anywhere else in the building, it would have looked too fake having to bring him there. But I quite like how they kind of staged and arranged it. And it's going to be, I think, quite a powerful visual for presumably Cody, but maybe Sammy as well, to call on. Like, they are dragging your depleted carcass to the ring without us. Like, there's three of them. There's two of them at any given time. There's three of them here. Like, you need us. You've got to, like, not be so stubborn about this. And, it's a good quality of a Kevin Owens character to have to keep him loyal to his old heel gimmick as well, I think.
As Drew points out, I'm here to pop the balloon. Has Kevin Owens specifically told Cody not to be in my business?
He said it in the promo earlier.
As of tonight, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Right, okay. I'll tell you one thing I didn't particularly like, right, was it was Kevin Owens who led Sikoa up the ramp.
Yeah.
And then the ambush from the Usos. So am I to believe that maybe the Usos just hang around there when the boy's in trouble, ready to pounce, as they so often do? But I like the idea. I prefer the idea because it makes far more sense of them sort of watching on a monitor because these shows are filmed. And then the merest hint of, oh, right, run, ambush. Let's get through, like, you know, Gorilla. I can't stand there. Have a chat with Road Dogg. What are you, Dean? Oh, well, I'm scheduled to go out. It's in the script. It just felt a bit fake, that, to me.
They probably wanted FaceTime with Vince McMahon.
I think they thought of the shot, which was quite cool, of the POV, you're the Usos, and then you're going to kick Kevin Owens in the face. They thought of that cool shot first, and the story second, because it's superficial, bad storytelling.
Well, on that note, we will wrap this up. Let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflet at
Michael Hamflet.
Follow Michael Sidgwick at
M Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE, as I said. Make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts.
M Sidgwick.
Daily Wrestling Podcast. Myself and the Daddy Boys will be back to preview the show formerly known as NXT 2.0 a bit later on today. And make sure, if you haven't done so already, just like Drew from Brooklyn did, you could leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Just make sure you screenshot it.
Need the proof.
Then email it to me, adam.wilborn@whatculture.com. For now, though, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dadley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.